Welcome, everyone, to our Thursday night Stargate Roundtable. We're happy to have all of you on board with us, and we have a very interesting program for you this evening. All our regulars are here, and the second hour we will be talking about a conscious business aligning with your belief system and working in your business in that way. So we'll begin with passing the talking stick to Angel Sue, who will set the tone and get us started. Angel Sue?
Thank you very much, Marita Robert. And we welcome you all in the light of the most radiant one, in the office of the Christ, and only in the office of the Christ. And we are invoking the loving energies of Saint Germain and the violet flame here now with us. So tucking in that beautiful, joyous, unconditional love, just intend that your breath absorb more in and you release more gratitude with the out. So as you're calling in all of your support team, intend that that breath just gather and disperse more of all the good things into you and sharing all the wonderful gratitude with all planet, all energies, all dimensions. And as we welcome in our higher selves, our twin flames, our guides, our masters, our teachers, our angels, all those from the lighted realms, past, present, future, we are settling into our heart space now, easily and gently, switching from all that frantic mind energy that is just clipping along, looping around, calming and dropping into the heart. We spend so much more time there with the energies that have been coming to us. You might not realize, but it is opening up more insight, more opportunities, more learning. And we welcome that for each one's path. And so as we praise, respect, thank, and love all that we're finding within our bodies at this time, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, we're just going to find that joy within ourselves. Let's open up that door. And as you allow either the joy as a child or allow the joy as an adult, find a moment where you have just been so happy or so in amazement or so in the at-one-ment as we're going to do our peace breath now. So just simply take a breath in and on the out-breath somewhere or at the end say the word peace. And let that memory play. Let it multiply. Let it magnify in every cell and every atom. Peace. Allow the body to remember feeling so good, so in the presence of love. And as we gather the energies now, intending that this stay with us, this innate knowing that that all is well. Let's welcome in the opportunities, the divine path, the understanding that whatever we're looking at mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, as we intend, as the divine children that we are, that all be brought into the proper alignment, the perfect, divine, happy solution. So with Nisara Nisara, the Reformation Act, with our Faction 3 White Knights and Galactic Forces of Light, with our whistleblowers and our media people, switching into this most amazing change. We're in alignment with the sudden changes, so we'll call in the happy ones and intend that this heaven on earth exists for all people, whether we judge as good or bad or not, all dimensions, all times, parallels, potentials. We're going to incorporate the law of one here now, which we just call in all those beings with the things that are important in our life that we're focusing on, and for what we know is going on for the people we claim, for all the events, all the changes that are happening on the planet, for everything, known and unknown, seen and unseen, we welcome in these beings that are amazing in what they've shared, the opportunities they've brought, the love, the support, even the challenges of life and death. We welcome them all. We bless them. We praise them. We respect them. We accept them as a part of the divine plan. And so we say to them, we are all one. And when one is harmed, all are harmed. Yet as one is helped, then all are helped. And we're claiming the highest help possible. Blessings beyond our understanding. Miracles and the perfect, divine, happy solution for everything. And in the name of who we are, and we are one with all there is, we ask that only the highest good of all concerned happen here. And we're giving thanks that this is done with 13 thank yous and honey in the heart. And so that is. So we're going to close off this part by saying amen. All women, all children, all beings, all creation, we are all one. And we come into that divine aspect easily, effortlessly, with great, great miracles abounding. And another miracle I want to share with you now is I have the most marvelous friend and an amazing mother in one lady named Harriet, a lady that was born 84 years ago today with purple eyes, violet eyes that shifted later on, but many neighbors and friends and family witnessed that. She has blue eyes now. But she has been such a great teacher, such a loving heart, And so if you will celebrate Harriet today, we were talking about what she would choose to be the new catalyst in the time that comes as her life keeps on expanding. And we decided that laughter would be one of the greatest gifts. So if you will chuckle more this evening and throughout the coming weekend with this blue moon energy we have coming in the early morning hours, hold that for Harriet. Hold that for yourself. Hold that for all to enjoy this throughout creation. And with that, thank you for wishing my mother happy birthday. And I turn the talking stick over. Thank you, Marita Robert.
Well, thank you, Angel Sue, and happy birthday, Harriet, from all of us on the team and all the listeners out here. I know you've been a loyal supporter of us for a long, long time. So thank you for that support and for giving us Angel Sue. And now I'll pass the talking stick to Carolyn and ask her to help us understand what's coming up in the Mayan calendar for the week and anything else that she wants to share.
Well, thank you, Marita Robert, and happy birthday, Harriet. Okay, yeah, we're beginning a new way today, a new white light way pulse is Etnob. So we're at one Etnob today, and we will have 13 days of this energy of the mirror. So it's an aspect of the warrior, a warrior aspect. It is tasked for our working on groundedness, that wise use of honesty and self-understanding. Look in the mirror. And its gifts are scrying the unseen and fluidity and persistence. And it's a time to surrender the illusions of separateness and fear and abandonment and all other illusions. So I'd like to just share a little bit about the Etnob from Ariel Hilberry. And so she says, "Truth, call my name. I stand naked before you, stripped of illusion." Etnob gives you a special opportunity to journey into the Hall of Mirrors, to address a part of yourself that you may have been avoiding or have not seen clearly. See the unclear, the unacknowledged, the illusion of problems. This is your chance to see the truth, to complete an unfinished lesson. Look into the mirror that reveals the unconscious and see the shadowy parts of yourself that show you what stands between yourself and the light. You are being given a gift of insight. So there you go. There's a little flavor of Etnob. And Zoe describes it, you are the mirror, and like the stormy and reflective ocean, you are ever-changing. You are persistent as the waves and find it difficult to stay grounded. Because of your work, you often find yourself in spiritual battles. Your honesty often cuts like a sword. You are the black obsidian mirror, and you describe the unseen. Etnob is a double-edged reflection of our goal to understand ourselves. You often stay hidden and are mysterious to others. You constantly challenge yourself and others with the illusion of our separation from spirit. So, and those are those words about Etnob. Just a little introduction. We are in the year of Ish, as we are in the year of manifestation of Ish. That magician. So let's manifest the magician in our life. Sunday was the first day of this new year with this energy of 10 each manifesting our powers in the inaugural. So let's work with that and enjoy that. And here we have Etnob bringing us into the core day. So today being the first day of Etnob, and then Friday a 2 Kuwak, and that lunar two, that duality, polarity, stabilizing two, and Kawak is the storm, and we have the blue moon also Friday. So we have that with us, this stormy weather lunar aspect of the two. And what else? Oh, yeah, it's the eve of Lamas at the same time. So it's a very powerful day tomorrow. Know that we have that storm energy working for us, with us, lighting clear thoughts. And that two energy. And then on Saturday, it is Lamas, the first day of August. So it's one of the four high holy holidays that we celebrate that are between the equinoxes and the solstices. So we're halfway through summer. On Saturday, three a how, rising to Christ consciousness with that tone of activation, electric, three, cadence. So lots of energy for this post, this Lamas time on Saturday. And then on Sunday, we enter the core day. It's a four in each. We begin the seventh union, which is right in the middle of this Gulf Moon path. And so the core days, these are the 20 central days within the traditional layout of the Gulfing. And these days allow the energy of the universe to move with an auxiliary amplification from the mind of light, Hunabku. And that's, so that's the God energy in the Mayan calendar is referred to as Hunabku. And it's spelled H-U-N-A-B, and then Ku, capital K-U. So, Hunabku. So look for a feeling of tremendous continuity in your life through these 20 days. This is really flowing, you know, with the synchronicity of in our lives and the continuity and the fluidity. So this is a good amplification of energy in these core days. And so we have 20 of those. We start that on Sunday with a four in each. And then Monday is a five each, the wind. Anish, of course, is the mother of the dragon energy. And then Monday, that center move of the five in the wind, each, or the voices of our ancestors, the voices of their, our guides. So listen on Monday. And then on Tuesday, six Akbals, the ninth. And we have that rhythmic six energy working in the night energy of work with our abundance with this energy and be grateful for working in the under the protection of darkness. And then on Wednesday, seven con, that C energy, it's all about timing, and seven is that really powerful magical tone representing the mid-tone between the. And we are in the mid-lunial, so it's almost like a double seven energy on Wednesday. And that seven energy is resonance and dreams and channeling. And it's a mystical quality to the, at the heart of this tone. So speak that. And then on Thursday when we come back, we have an eight Qichang, the serpent. And that's the wave we just finished yesterday. The wave of the serpent. And so we revisit that next week when we come back on the eighth tone, that harmonic tone, that fine-tuning relationship and tuning into galactic harmony. So we do that as we come back to the Stargate Roundtable next week, tune into that galactic harmony. So really, that is the Mayan calendar this week. We have, it's powerful in that we also have this beautiful blue moon and the Lamas and the core days beginning. So, and that, none of the days are seasonal in any other sense other than the core days. And that's just a general energy flush in our lives. So enjoy that multidimensionality in those energies. And I passed the talking stick, Marita. I have no other comments to make about anything.
We've had our day out of time, and we're, like you said, Happy New Year. And you don't have anything as far as your classes that you need to announce?
No, I'm just having my usual every second Sunday of the month meeting on the 8th. So that's it.
All right. Very good. Well, we also have Annie Rose on our team here this evening, and she's going to make, she'd talk to us a little bit about some of the equinox and all of the astrological things that were happening. So, Annie Rose, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Marita. You're sounding good. Marita,
okay.
Unfortunately, I do not have access to an ephemeri tonight. And I need to know the coordinates of tomorrow's full moon or tonight's full moon. You know, what sign is it in and what degree? In case who or someone else has that.
Well, I don't have it. Tara would be the only one that might have it. Do you have anything else that you remember? I mean,
I'm here, sisters. Okay, let me just look here. On July 31st, Pacific time, it's 3:43 in the morning, so that's 6:43 in the morning Eastern time, and it's in Aquarius moon, and it's a blue moon, I know that, and it's super, and and what did you say?
What degree? Degree. Is it 90?
Well, it says 7 Aquarius 50. Does that make any sense on my calendar here?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, well, that's okay. That's very good to know. Okay, so you know we're fast approaching the eclipses of September, which definitely have already begun to have their effects on us. We had discussed that at the last roundtable discussion, and I said it's going to affect airplanes and water. And as we all know, and very thankfully, I think, the Asian airplane has been found, and it gives a lot of closure or relief to 239 families. God bless them. And our best wishes and prayers for their healing, the healing of their grief, go to them. Unfortunately, there's going to be something else before the 13th that's going to come up regarding airplanes. Here in America, we're going to have a little bit of a problem. I hope that everybody's on high alert as far as our homeland security is concerned. And what is so funny about this Malaysian airplane, I had seen it amidst a lot of brush, bush, trees. And sure as heck, it had, they discovered that it had been in an island. Of course, now it's underwater. They're going to get the whole plane out, and they will discover the root cause of the crash, which is going to be surprising to some people. Not really surprising, though, because that plane is worth several million dollars, and there were a lot of countries that would have liked to have ownership of it. And I think we're going to be surprised at who all is involved in its disappearance last year. But again, like I said, peace of mind is just absolutely, there's no way you can name a price tag to peace of mind and relief. And so those 239 families, We'll have a lot of relief from their worries that they had for the past year. But
we're glad that you're feeling better and that you're able to be here and work with us. And maybe next week you'll have your ephemeris where you can see what.
Yeah, I will.
Give us
more details. I want to bring it up, Marita. Again, I'm doing this for Marita. anyone that wants to know their planet's placement at birth, all they have to do is send me their first name and the birth date, and of course a return address. Please send that to me. There's no charge for this, but it's very important to have because, for instance, I am an Aries born on April the 11th, but I have six planets in Taurus. That's called, and that's the selenium of the planet. So when I read these daily horoscope magazines and newspapers, I read Aries and I read Taurus. But I also am very, very strong believer in moon placement. My moon happens to be in Virgo. My ascendant or rising sign is in Capricorn. So I try to read Capricorn too, but especially I'm very, very, very strong leaning towards reading my moon sign, which is Virgo. Because the moon placement in your chart tells you what you're like, what your inner self is like, not what the public sees, but what you truly feel and how you react from the inside out. And I'd be glad to supply that for you because it was many years when I was very young and just starting out in astrology. I had no channel to get that information from. I had to study astrology myself to figure out where my planets were. And I know what a headache that can be. And I'd be more than happy to do that in Marita's name.
Well, Annie, would you give us your mailing address again? And they should send a self-addressed stamped envelope for the return information. And
okay. So what is 5401 Lincoln, like Abraham Lincoln, Lincoln Street. But you must write street out and underline it. Because there's a Lincoln Court, Lincoln Place, Lincoln Street, and Lincoln Highway. And they all have 5401s. But this is 5401 Lincoln Street. And the town is Merrillville. M-E-R-R-I-L-L. V like Victor. I-L-L-E. Indiana. I-N. 46410.
Okay.
Merrillville. Indiana.
And just address it to Annie Rose, or do you want to use...
That's all they have to write.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, thank you for making that offer to all of our listeners, and we'll see how many people will take advantage of that and learn a little more about themselves. So
yeah,
I think
it's good to know. And like I said, the moon is such an important important aspect of our life, because that's what we're like inside. Like my moon in Virgo makes me have very fine hair. My it's not strong and thick and tough like an Aries could be. It's very, very fine. And it also makes you always feel inadequate. Now, that sounds ridiculous, but it's not. In other words, Maria, you may tell me, oh, Annie, you did a good show. And I'm saying, yeah, Maria thought it was good then, but what about now? Because you always look back, want to see if you could have improved something. And you're always trying to prove something to yourself. And that's the downfall of a Virgo. And that's one thing Virgos have to overcome. They have to learn self-confidence. Sometimes it's hard.
Okay. Well, we thank you for all of that. And I think we better pass the talking stick to Tara and Rama and let them give us a little update on what's going on out there in the world. And then we do have a guest the second hour. So, Rama, did you talk to anybody today?
Rama.
Greetings.
Hello.
Hi,
okay.
Andy.
I just want to say one thing before we go on to that. We have $700 towards our rent. We need $300 more, and we should really get to know about where that's coming from by tomorrow. And you can send it to the PayPal because The King of Swords can help Rama get it out right away from PayPal. And as you wanted the whole thing to come, just press for friends and family, and then they won't take any money out of it. So thank you, everybody. Standing on our heads at the last moment, but gosh, that blue moon tomorrow. I just want to say, everybody, that it's everything. It's going to be a rather short post, is who wrote this, Rama?
Anna
Merkaba. And she said, many of us are already aware that this Friday we are being blessed with a blue moon. What I have just found out from my guides is that it is also a moon of infinite opportunities and infinite potential. We have been working diligently toward improving our lives, making changes, and looking deep within. And now it is our time to reap the rewards of our efforts. This blue moon, as I am told, is a moon of total abundance, total harvest, total release, and just rewards. This is the time to not only ask for what we want, rather to actually, in all big capital letters, receive everything that we have been working toward. So let us take this opportunity to ask for what we want and then see it quickly manifest into our reality. To help us do so, I have been presented with a very simple and straightforward grid that we can use during this blue moon. And so, Rama, you going to get that? Did you get that on the website yet, this thing?
No, I'm having trouble getting it up there.
You are?
Yeah, I am. Well, I got to play with my programs.
Oh, well, you can call up Samana and send it to her and ask her to put it up there.
Okay.
Okay. So the how, what I am being told we ought to do is write down all of our desires, everything that we wish to see manifest into our reality in the weeks to come, and place this piece of paper into the center of this grid we see here with its picture, with the wheat ears, the blue moon, the citrine, and the cinnamon. For extra amplification, we can take either of these gemstones, amethyst, citrine, ruby, emerald, or granite, and place it where we see the citrine in this picture. We can also add wheat ear as we have it and place it where we see that in the picture. The same goes for cinnamon. However, as we do not have any of these things on hand, it says okay, because the energy coming from this grid is enough. This is also a good time to release the last bits of any blockages that have been holding us back. So simply ask for these blocks to be dissolved as we meditate through the full moon, and at whatever time that is most resonating with us, we can do that. And then follow our intuitive promptings on how to restructure our lives in order to fill it with even more divine light. Wishing us all a phenomenal experience during this blue moon. May it shine all sorts of blessings upon all. Namaste.
We must not forget that when we ask that our vibration or our environment be cleared of any obstacles, we ask those obstacles be destroyed and they be neutralized into the ethereal. Because we don't want to bless it off ourselves and it land on someone else. We don't want to see anybody suffer with obstacles. So always ask, ever you ask for anything to be removed from you, whether it's a negative thought, word, or deed, you ask for it to be neutralized into the ether so it loses all of it.
Okay. Thank you, sister. And you might want to give the report from the King of Swords about the plane to start with.
Yes.
And this is from the King of Swords. It doesn't cancel anything at the level of seeing that is being said about the plane. But all the plane and all of the parts that may show up, the King of Swords said they're all faked. They dumped them in the ocean a year ago. Go ahead and tell some more.
Yeah, I spoke with the King of Swords today, and he said all of the stuff going on concerning this plane is all fabricated. I mean, I saw today on a CNN somewhere in my travels that they found a suitcase along with this piece of a wing. All of it is manipulated because that plane and the people disappeared.
And they're all safe.
That's right.
They're sitting in the fifth dimension with the Ashtar Command, and they're having a good old time. And they'll be back, and everything will be back intact. And what the people will celebrate then will be a whole different story than the temporary disinformation that they're getting now.
Yes, the King of Swords shared with me that, you know, we are watching, like, you know, the message was sent out as the energies increase exponentially as we move into August. All the chaos is ensuing, and it is really moving exponentially up in the levels of, I mean, it's just, you know, absolute insanity with what's going on with the 13 families as they lose control by the second. And the King of Swords, you know, said also right now, courtesy of Mr. Ashton Carter, the defense secretary, you know, Jade Helm is out there playing its war games in, you know, across the Southwest into California. And this ties in with the global financial collapse that is happening. The Dow, the NASDAQ, all the stories about our financial systems are absolute lies. There's nothing holding up the markets except crazy glue and duct tape and plastic. As Adolf Ashcroft, remember him, you know, Mr. Ashcroft, with his, you know, magenta alerts, be very afraid of the terrorists. And all of what's going on has to do with these issues where the 13 families are playing the fear card. That's the absolute last card they have. They don't have anything else.
They've been doing that for a really long time.
Yes, and this fiasco across the Southwest into California, you know, people like Ted Cruz, people like Michelle Bachmann, people like Mr. Trump, who want to build a wall at the border between Mexico and here, they're afraid ISIL is going to come up through Mexico.
They know better.
All of it is absolute lies. Because, you know, ISIL are black ops. Jade Helm is also our military that have been brainwashed and indoctrinated in the event of the global financial collapse. And, you know, in a certain sense, how are, you know, 4,000 guys from the military going to take on, as Bix Weir put it, 330 million Americans with guns? And I also have to say, like what Bernie Sanders said last night, we need to have full background checks, a complete absolute ban on all automatic weapons. Why do we need these kinds of guns in our streets where Black Lives Matter, all lives matter? And, you know, I called up Leslie Marshall today. She took the place of Sam Cedar and Randy Rhodes. And I got to say, Leslie Marshall is a shill for Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly. She's a regular fake news contributor on that fake news website that Roger Ailes put together called GOP TV that has absolute no basis in truth. They are all lies. And what Bernie Sanders laid out, he had over 100,000 people in what he did last night. And
what he had was house parties all across the nation, and he was at a house party himself in D.C., and he broadcast over the internet to everybody in the nation from there. And it was very cool. I'm just going to say it was so cool.
Yes.
And he is not lacking in knowing what's going on with the Black Lives Matter group, and he is increasing in his tone and his deliverance of what needs to happen, a complete revision of our criminal justice system. And again, just remember that that's what's happening here with this September thing. And, you know, by that blue moon in September, or no, by what kind of moon? Blood moon.
Yeah, the blood
moon. By the blood moon at the end, the one at the end of September, Saturn will be back in Sagittarius, and it will represent major changes in the areas. Well, it rules banking system, the courts of law, lawyers, teachers, mountains, religion, and the higher mind. And during the time period, as we get to that blood moon at the end of September, we will see the full manifestation of a total new financial system, a new court system, and new governing systems. And the old will be gone and the new will be here. And Saturn will be in Sag again for the next 2.5 years to anchor that reality.
The
King of Swords say anything about
that? The King of Swords said, the dentist who shot Cecil the Lion, Mr. Obama is looking into this story about the lion. And let's say that dentist who shot the lion and he suffered for 40 hours before.
He didn't shoot it first. He stuck it with an arrow.
He shot it with an arrow.
But it was an arrow that had the force of a gun somehow.
That's right.
But he didn't die for 40 hours until they found him and then used a real gun to
make
that. I just have a question, Rama, because those two guides, they should have known that Cecil the Lion was the lion that was, you know, an icon in Zimbabwe. They were in Zimbabweans.
What this has to do with the King of Swords said is that when rich Americans go to various countries and kill, you know, for sport, what is the difference between that and, let's say, our police who are killing black people simply because the undeclared war against people of color, it's called ethnic cleansing, pure and simple. It is on the larger scale that has to do with the absolute failure of the 13 families. They know it. It's already in the bag, as Mother has put it. We have won. We're already moving up in the higher frequencies and dimensions. These guys know it. They're absolutely petrified of the next step. The bird people are here. I'll say it again. The hawk-headed avian people are absolutely part of the bird tribes. The lion people, the reptilian people who represent all the contingency forces on Mother's ship, the Nibiru. This has to do with the quintillions, and I want to use the word 40 zeros and then some. That's how.
Quaturo decillion.
Yes. And you could say, that's how many ships are in our skies, and then some. And it absolutely is in this place where the energies are only getting higher and higher. We have won. These guys, as they choose to embrace love, that is also the case. Also, today is Guru Purnima Day. It is the full moon in July where we honor the guru within. You know, the age of the gurus, it's over. You know, we are the ones that we've been asking to show up. Here we are. In the last few days, I spoke with Tom the Cat and Rana Moo and many other folks. And, I mean, what I'm watching here in this city of Holy Faith yesterday, I sort of saw 45 cops on the streets. Today, I saw 25 cops, and they are blatantly stopping people for the minorest, you know, absolute minor infractions of the law. This, on another level, has to do with the orders that have been given by Ashton Carter and the Pentagon. I have to say that this ties in with Jade Helm, as they are increasing the level of fear frequencies across the U.S. and other parts of the planet because they are...
I think it's a very tiny group because there's only, at the most, there's 8,000 of them.
Yeah.
At the least, there's 4,000 of them. So,
and that's what I said earlier.
Yeah, I'm just saying that what kind of fear is that to threaten that? They can't do anything.
No. And
we've got quattro decillion ships in the sky, and this is a galactic operation.
Yes, and you know, rejoice. We are in that moment of the white wizard that has shown up with this, you know, new year as we have moved into the new 1320 cycle. As we are approaching 8-8 Lionsgate, there is a black hole in 3 degrees of Leo in the constellation. That black hole that is in 3 degrees of Leo, that black hole is a portal that goes into the antimatter universe as well as the Scorpi black hole, which is another entrance and exit from this, you know.
Oh, call it Big Will.
Hi, Big Will.
Hello, Lord Rama and Lady Master Tara. I need to ask a question concerning about our dear friend in Canada, Reverend Kevin Arnett. What is the status with him and what is happening?
I don't really follow Kevin Arnett simply because...
It's not the... I mean, it's good, yet it's only background. They do not have any authority to make the whole thing change.
Yeah,
it's a common law group that's working on helping people to understand what's going on a larger scale. Yet the World Court with Lady Master Nutta in charge will do the big changes.
Yes.
So, in other words, when you say you're not following him... what do you mean by that, Lord Rama?
I kind of don't really pay any attention to his story simply because it's coming from Faction 2.
No, it's not Faction 2. It's common law.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yes,
it
is.
It's just that they answer to Faction 3 just like all the others.
Yeah.
They don't have the authority to make any big changes. They can actually suss out the criminal activity and expose it, though, and they're telling the whole truth about that. But there's nothing going to come from there in terms of announcements of Nisara or arrests or anything like that. No. It will always come from Faction 3, White Knights.
That has I see. Good. Okay, very good.
Okay. Anything else, Commander?
Well, yes, there is a question concerning about this this young lady who was killed. There's another young lady who was killed just a couple of days ago. I think it was in New Mexico. Yes, New Mexico, wasn't it?
I just saw today that they found another black lady dead in a New York jail cell. I don't know about New Mexico.
Yes. Yes. There's also one in New Mexico as well. This is really very serious. And yes, you're right. They're turning up the heat on assassinating females now. So it seems like they're shifting from male to female now. It's really something that I don't know what to say about all that.
Big Will, what can you tell us more details about what happened in New Mexico?
This young lady, I think she was of Native. She was a Native Indian, I believe it was. She wasn't black, but she was Native Indian, and it was something about domestic violence, or something about the. Some big fight, and the police came out to the house, and they so-called arrested somebody, and then they shot her by accident. Whatever reason, what happened, they shot her by accident. It was two kids in the house. I don't know how that. I would have to get the. I'm gonna have to get the article, and I'll send it to you, Lord Rama.
Okay, I haven't heard about this, but thank you.
That is awful.
There's one of our listeners has sent me an email asking if I would ask Taran Rama a comment on the YouTube video by Alexandra Meadows and Daniel Tegg regarding planetary shift urgent. Incoming message for all starseeds. Do you know what they're talking about or what it is they're asking?
Yes. I read that message.
Did you read the whole thing?
I read what this lady sent. And that is from that website, galacticconnections.com. I don't really read that website because they are connected with Cobra.
And Cobra is a black op.
Yeah.
Not a real anything.
And, you know, I just, you know, I read that stuff with 3 grains of salt. I place it in the circle of support.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That answered their question. That's what they wanted to know. Okay. Well, it's about almost to the top of the hour. I don't know whether they've been able to Skype and get our guest on. Joy, are you there with us? Okay, I guess we'll keep going until, yes, she is.
Hello, okay. She's coming now.
Well, we will be coming back to Tara and Rama in the last hour here after we have our guest for the evening. So stand by. And Joy Clarissa Taylor is our guest tonight. Hello, Joy.
Hello, it's great to be here again.
All right. Well, Joy is does a lot of seminars and workshops and teaching people to really do conscious business, to get in alignment with what they're doing. And so I'm going to let her help us understand a little bit how we might create that for ourselves or what we could be doing that would help to keep us in alignment with our own soul purpose. So, Joy, I'm going to just turn it over to you for a little bit here, and then I'll ask you some questions a little later on.
Okay, well, I always love your questions. So it's this is one of my favorite topics. I'm an entrepreneur by heart, and I'm also a conscious being who loves God, who loves evolution, who loves energy. And for me, it was pretty exciting when I realized that I could merge those passions of business and consciousness together. And we don't hear those words together all the time, do we?
What the norm is today.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is things are changing, and I really believe that now more than ever, we really can have a new paradigm of business, and we're seeing a new paradigm of business. We're seeing more and more companies that are successful, and these are companies that are leading with their values and missions and making a difference. So, you know, old school business was all about profit, and new business, the new paradigm is really a triple bottom line, not just the bottom line. And for those of you who don't know or haven't heard of the term triple bottom line, it's the planet and people and then profit. So companies are measuring success. Conscious businesses, conscious companies are measuring their success by how it contributes to humanity, be that their employees or their customers, and how it contributes to the planet and our ecology, as well as how it can be profitable for the purpose of being sustainable for the intention of fulfilling the mission of the company, which ought to be, and in many new cases, is aligned with offering positive solutions on the planet. So I'm all about imagining a new world, and I know you are too. I know a lot of the listeners are also interested in changing the world for the better. And I'm just really excited about the climate in business. I am a business consultant. I teach at the local college, and I work with a regional economic development institute in the SBA, SBDC. So I'm constantly engaged in business activities, and I see now more than ever a change. And that change is happening not just because new emerging entrepreneurs are coming forth with values, but because people like us, the consumers, we are voting with our dollars, and we are not voting for plastic disposable imports. We're voting for things that are quality. We're voting for things that make a difference.
Well, and you know, I first learned to know Joy was involved with the Amazon Herb Company many years ago, and it was when Robert and I went to that, I said there was the most conscious group of people that walk into a room that was a business oriented gathering to have that much consciousness and the energy. And now, as many of you know, how much involved I have been and am involved with all of the organic farming and teaching people how to do sustainable farming and living. I met Joy again, and this time was with a company called Purium, and that, and I think a little bit, maybe you might say just a little bit about the values of that and how that is in alignment with what I'm doing as well as with you, because it is another way for us to do something that is good for the planet, good for people, and it's like you say, the triple bottom line is if we can get people to begin looking in that direction, then all of us will benefit because of the trickle down effect of that triple bottom line. So, talk a little bit about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm always on the lookout for companies that are serving as models for sustainability, for environmental well-being, for a purpose greater than themselves, that are based more in education than they are in sales. And as a person who loves commerce, sacred commerce myself, you know, I definitely have my eye out for great opportunities. But I live in integrity, as do you, Marietta, and, you know, we're very careful about anything we might align with. But, yeah, I'd be happy to talk a little bit about a few samples of organizations or companies that I think are really trendsetters in the world of conscious business, and one of them is Purium. And one of the things I really like about Purium is it is a good example of what Paul Hawkins calls natural commerce or natural capitalism. He wrote that book many years ago. He also wrote the book, The Ecology of Commerce. And since then, many new books have come out that are really talking about the environmental impact of commerce and the responsibility of businesses to pay attention to that. And that it's time for us to value monetarily our natural resources. So I'm a big fan of this planet. I think I said that last time I was on your call. you know, I'm just a big fan of planet Earth, and we have such a paradise here. So what I do love about the Purium company is that their whole intention, their whole mission is educating people on eating organic GMO foods. And you, as an organic farmer, and I have a background actually in eco-ag too. I don't know if you know that. I worked on farms for years. But, you know,
you said organic GMO foods, and I know that's not what you meant.
Organic GMO-free foods. Thank you. Organic GMO-free foods. I love it. Good catch. Yeah, you can't really be organic and GMO at the same time.
That's true. Or non-GMO. Sometimes GMO-free or non-GMO, one or the other it has to be.
Isn't it funny that we even have to define that these days? You know, we look back 50 years and all food was grown in soil that was way more mineral rich than this. And we had smaller farms and we had family farms and we were more regional in our distribution. And GMO wasn't even a word. And now we've got Frankenfoods, which is, you know, what David Sandoval calls it. And it's so true. You know, we really do. We have these genetically modified foods, and there's a rise, over 60% increase in children having gut issues, intestinal issues, since the introduction to GMO foods. So I was very attracted to this farm-to-family philosophy that I found at Purium. You know, they really, Amy Venner and David Sandoval, they set out on a mission to promote real live food, natural food, 22 years ago. And, you know, 22 years later, now is a time more than ever, probably because of the contrast, probably because of the degenerative diseases people are experiencing, to really look back to the way it ought to be and the way it was, which is natural foods. And which is a way to protect our planet. Pesticides and chemicals that are put into the soil, they are leached into our water system, and eventually, one way or another, they will make it into this biosphere that we live in. All the pharmaceuticals that people take, they are excreted. You know, when we eliminate toxins from our body. So people who are taking pharmaceuticals, that goes into the sewer system. And all these chemical compounds on the planet Earth are really devastating. So one of the greatest things we can do to prevent that part of the, what do I want to say, the health of the planet, is to choose as consumers to vote with our dollars to purchase products that are supporting the GMO project, which is GMO-free, non-GMO food, and that are organic. And that's really what, you know, drew me to the mission and the vision and the values and the integrity of a company like Purium. And they're one of many. I mean, there are so many incredible examples now that some people may or may not be aware of. Nike, for example, many years ago up in Portland was really clear that they wanted to create a sustainability environmental division or management line where they were going to look at their carbon footprint. And in 2010, Nike was able to lower its carbon dioxide emissions to its 2007 levels. And it was able to do this through several ventures, including focusing on materials. This is where a lot of the carbon emissions are coming from. They put more investment into energy efficiency in their plants and their operations, and just reduced overall reliance on grid energy and used more renewable energy. Now, Nike was not forced to do this. Nike chose to do this. And so they're one of the companies that I feature when I teach the triple bottom line business class that I created for our local community college, because, you know, climate change is an issue. And this is a company that said, no, I'm going to be a little bit more conscious about this. I want to be part of the solution, not the problem. So, you know, I was going to mention one other company, kind of part of the triple bottom line. We're talking about the environmental part. Interface Inc. And I was first introduced to the founder of that company, Mr. Anderson, Ray Anderson, in 2002 when I attended a business and consciousness conference. And that was held in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And he has a billion-dollar manufacturing company. He produces commercial and institutional products for interior, i.e. mostly carpet. But he had an epiphany after reading Paul Hawkins that he needed to take corporate responsibility before the government told him to or consumers told him to. So truly a pioneer. And he created recycled carpet. And guess what? It became the best-selling line in his entire company. So not only was he able to create something that was better for the planet, but it ended up being more profitable for him as well. So I think it's fascinating if we really take time to study conscious business and conscious companies. And there's a lot of them out there.
Well, and the neat thing is, like you say, it doesn't have to be. And many people say, well, if you're doing organic, you're doing it at a loss. Or many of the things that we talk about in commerce, people feel like they have to take a loss of their profit line. And that's such a good example of doing the right thing and then being rewarded financially for it.
Well, hopefully the triple bottom line business will result in better profit. You know, I do believe that if we focus on offering the best value we can to consumers and having a social entrepreneurship stewardship mindset and giving back to the planet or reducing the carbon footprint or offering a solution to the planet, honestly, in today's world, I think that's the only profitable business. It's definitely the only thing I want to be engaged in. You know, Whole Foods is another example. And I'm a super big fan of John Mackey, who is the CEO of Whole Foods. And he co-authored a book with Roz Sidodia. And some of you are probably familiar with it. It's called Conscious Capitalism. And the subtitle is Liberating the Heroic Spirit of Business. And it has become a best-selling book. And he really highlights throughout the book not only his own story of choosing organic and choosing natural foods, but more importantly, choosing a corporate culture that was focused on values and that was totally 100% purpose-driven, where customers matter most. And if you look through his book, you'll see example after example of how important those foundational statements are, your mission when you start an organization and your values, which are your guiding standards. They are the most important foundational statements. I mean, they become the business plan, ideally. And so the call in the book, Conscious Capitalism, is all about solidifying and then implementing in your organization values and purpose. So pretty exciting to see what's happening there. You know, it's like every company needs to ask the question, why do I exist? And, you know, why am I needed? And what's the contribution I want to make? And why is the world better because I'm here? And I think a lot of the listeners, a lot of you on the line, you do that individually. You ask yourself, why am I here? What is my purpose as an individual? So now it's time to translate that same kind of life purpose inquiry into the world of business. And it's a world of business. It's not just a world of nonprofit anymore. Businesses are going deeper and they're also posting more often their values and their purpose. And back to what you just said before, you know, I rambled on, but you know, when you do align with purpose and you do align with people and the planet, chances are if you have good business acumen and a good product and service, you're going to be really successful. And you know, even better than that, you're going to feel really good about yourself as a business owner.
Joy, I've got some messages here from some of our listeners that you gave some books and some authors and companies, and they didn't have their pen and paper ready. So we want to go back and mention the Whole Foods and the book. And can you recall some of the book that you mentioned, and so that they can now take notes?
Absolutely. I can definitely recall them because I pulled out about 10 of them before this this interview. I was like, wow, my bookshelf is filled with conscious business books. Conscious Capitalism by John Mackey and Raj Sisodia. And you can definitely just Google Conscious Capitalism book and you'll find that book. It's also an audio book. I also mentioned Paul Hawken, H-A-W-K-E-N, The Ecology of Commerce and Natural Capitalism. Those are kind of foundational books, but there are so many more for people who are interested in eco or green business, The Natural Step for Business, which is a training.
Joy.
Yeah.
Can you back up and say that slower? You just rolled that right off your tongue. What's the name of that Paul Hawkins book?
The Ecology of Commerce and Natural Capitalism are two of his books.
Oh, two books. Okay.
Yeah, two different books.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he spells his name H-A-W-K-E-N-S?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, his book is really the first extensive, truly ecological analysis of business. So it is kind of the foundation. He was one of the first to, in the United States, begin the conversation of what is the value of the environment. In natural capitalism, he says we need to link our economy with our ecology, eco, economy, ecology. And we need to give value to our riparian zones and our wetlands and our trees because they keep the planet healthy. They keep the air clean. And without them, it would cost millions of dollars in infrastructure to purify our air, if we could even figure it out technologically. So I was lucky enough in 1995 or 94, actually, to be first introduced to this man and his work when I started studying ecology in college. And I think that's really when I began to wake up to the possibility that we could offer solutions, and those solutions could be big, and they could be corporate, and they could be business. They didn't have to just be nonprofit. So Paul Hawkins is definitely a hero. And there are many more. I mentioned The Natural Step for Business, and that is all about wealth ecology and the evolutionary corporation. And I love that term, the evolutionary corporation. I don't know exactly who's listening right now. I think all of us were obviously consumers. But you know, some of you on the line might also be entrepreneurs or small business owners. I would think many of you might be in the service industry, or you know, if you're listening to this call, you might be engaged in healing work. What a profound and beautiful thing to be offering sacred commerce in that way, where people are trading their time for money. And, you know, money can be a very good thing when we approach it as energy. John Easterling from the Amazon Herb Company, he said, you know, why have money? And he basically said, money is a way to reach your highest potential, contribute to the causes you believe in, and support the people you love. So by having successful businesses, by being profitable, that part of the triple bottom line is important too. By being profitable, we have the resources, we have the energy, we have the financial resources to give back to causes we believe in, and to maybe choose more wisely and deliberately when we purchase clothing. Why not buy local? Why not buy organic cotton? No more synthetics. You know, things of that nature, the more we have this green energy and money, the more we can really contribute. So I'm shouting out and saying congrats to each of you that are entrepreneurs and business owners. And I'm guessing that you're living in alignment with your values and your business is rooted in purpose. You're coming from service, and I really encourage you to be as successful and profitable as possible, because, you know, we need more conscious people to have wealth so that we can contribute to causes we believe in and purchase and vote with our dollars.
Well, and you know, we talk about, you talk about using the cotton instead of the synthetics, and people on the call probably heard me say before, many, many years ago, I couldn't wait until I got home from teaching at the university, because we were wearing those awful polyester suits. And when they couldn't wait to get home to put on my blue jeans. And then later I realized it wasn't just that it was the blue jeans, it was cotton. And so we're not only doing something that is good, but it's also, if we wear, and using stress creatively is a seminar workshop that I've done for lots and lots of people. And what we do there, we'll do the muscle testing with putting a blouse of the same color in silk and polyester, or a sweater in acrylic and wool, and letting people feel what it's like. Because if we choose to wear these synthetic fabrics, it also, we're, if we really like it and we are willing to give up part of our energy to do it, we make that conscious decision. But it is using some of our natural energy to, when we don't wear the natural fibers. So that's something that not only is good for the planet and good, it's actually good for our bodies.
Yes, absolutely. I'm so
I see we have a caller here. Carlson wants to ask a question.
Carlson, hi, thank can you hear me okay?
We can. What's your question?
Great. My question has to do with banking and lending, you know, commercial instruments. As we kind of build a roadmap towards how we do business now in the current environment, leading towards a Nisara environment, do you have thoughts or concrete suggestions on how to handle interest-based products and instruments such as, you know, commercial lending, credit cards, things like that, to manage one's business in terms of, you know, merchant-based transactions, as well as, you know, where to conduct your banking. I mean, credit. We've talked on the show about credit unions. Is that something that, even when you use credit unions, what are you seeing in terms of your partners and people you do business with in terms of the type of decisions and options they're looking at? Because you got to finance your business. You got to run it now, you know?
Right, right, right. Well, you know, local banks are wonderful. Credit unions are always wonderful. It just makes sense to be supporting small and supporting decentralized and regional. A lot of communities are coming up with their own money and bartering and time banks, which is a whole nother discussion, as I'm sure you're very, very aware of. And, you know, this big shift to crowdfunding. There are a lot of social interactive sites where people are raising money through people. So commerce is changing dramatically. It's not my expertise, but what I can say and I'm seeing is people are funding people. And, you know, the more that we can do that, the more that we can exchange our goods and services, I do think that's the direction that we'll just have to go in. I do think we'll move more and more to a regional distribution models and economy because of the costs and rising inflation and energy that is needed to do anything other than that. You know, smaller credit cards are nice. And I'm not against big corporations because some of them are excellent. I work for an economic development institute that is often funded by Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo is one of the banks I'm aware of that gives a lot of money back to small businesses and regional economic development. And they have quite a big emphasis on helping people start their own businesses. So they've given a lot of grant money to economic development on a regional level. So I'm careful of not judging the big guys because the big guys aren't always bad. But I would encourage people to do their research and as much as possible go local. And I do think that this whole movement towards crowdfunding or going online and socially supporting each other in dreams and business endeavors. Kiva.org is an organization I highly recommend people check out, Kiva.org. And it's all about lending money to small businesses. It started as more of an out of the U.S. non-domestic organization nonprofit, but it's moved into the domestic field. And I personally know two small businesses who have pitched their story on Kiva, received the sponsorship to be endorsed, and have gotten the money they needed, which in many cases is $5,000 or $10,000 or $20,000, not a lot of money, to start and expand their business. So I hope that somewhat answered your question.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for bringing up. And, you know, on that note, I want to go back to Purium because it is one of the models and one of the ways that we know each other. What I like about Purium is it is also advocating a distribution of wealth that's different than most wholesale retail models. It does have a business opportunity attached to it, which is what drew me to it. I'm very much into affiliate sales, mini franchises, and referral sales or network marketing, because I think it allows the average everyday person, work at home moms, service professionals, the opportunity to have a secondary income stream with a very low investment. So while we're talking about it takes money to make money, well, in situations or businesses like Purium that offer an affiliate network marketing model, for $100 or $350, people have an online business today. And those people aren't necessarily the wealthy people. I had the great fortune of meeting a founder of Inzacta, which is another network marketing company that is in Mexico and the U.S., but his big mission and vision in founding the network marketing company was to distribute wealth, because too many rich people are getting rich and the divide between the rich and poor is way too wide. And this was the fastest, easiest way he knew to help the average person earn an income. I think that's a movement. I think that's a mission. And I know David Sandoval, who founded Purium, said he was reluctant to move into the model. He had been doing direct-to-consumer and affiliate sales. But when he realized the potential to create community, because people want a sense of belonging, and to distribute wealth, he said, I'm in. I'm in because I grew up poor.
Okay, anybody on the team here that wants to ask a question?
You know, I can share a couple more books if you'd like.
I'll just
you
say
know what? I think that would be really good. And also, Joy, if you would take a moment after the show and just send me an email with those. We archive all of this, and we also post things like this so that people can have the information. So that would be helpful, and I'll make sure that that gets posted then too.
Great. And yeah, all of these books are really just a Google search or an Amazon.com search away. I'll mention another book, and I think someone there with you had a question, but one of my favorite recent reads is called The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership, and it's a new paradigm for sustainable success. So these are three authors that came together, and they talk about bringing deliberateness, bringing energy, bringing compassion to leadership, and specifically how this might affect the executives of a company, because we know that what happens at the top trickles down, but we also know that what happens on the floor with employees creates a culture that will be felt by management. But this book is particularly aimed towards C-level executive teams and any leader for that matter, even if you have a small micro enterprise, in thinking more about working above the line, they call it. Above the line is being committed to conscious leadership. And I really like a lot of things they have to say here about taking responsibility, not being a victim. Not being a victim is something they talk about a lot, and I think it's really important for anyone in conscious business and leadership that, you know, as we evolve as people, and as they say in this book, at first we think things happen to me. And then we think in our ego, they happen by me. I did it, which is part of evolution. Eventually we evolve to a place where things happen through me, which is much more of being a conduit or an instrument of the divine. And the final step in the evolution is things happen as me. I am that I am. I am one with all that is. So imagine a world where our CEOs are living life and allowing life to happen as me. Imagine a world where we truly live and do business in integrity with our values, where social businesses are those that not only turn a large profit, but also create change for people and the environment. I imagine that kind of a world, and I see a lot of evidence that we're creating that kind of a world. And so that book, again, is called The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. So I didn't want to keep talking because I think I interrupted someone who had a question, maybe.
This is Kathy in the background. I didn't really have a question. I just wanted to tell people that I just checked out on Amazon.com. The paperback for the Conscious Capitalism book is only $10.80. Of course, if you want a hardback, you know, it's going to be $17 or more. But, you know, it's affordable.
Great. Thank you. I've been lately doing a lot of audibles as well. And for those of you who haven't tapped into the books on tape with Amazon, there's a, I guess, partner company called Audible. It's actually more environmental friendly to download the audio and actually and listen to books as well. And I'm pretty sure all the books I mentioned, because they're bigger known books in this industry, are probably on Audible as well.
Are there any other questions or callers? And I will mention that if you want to call in, a toll-free number for the United States and Canada, 888-429-5471. 888-429-5471. So you can call in and ask a question, and we'll get to you as soon as we can. And by the way, you don't miss any program, because while you're listening, while you're waiting to be called on, you can hear what's going on, so you're not going to miss something. Sometimes people hesitate to jump off their phone or their computer because they're afraid they are going to miss it, and you don't really, so... Okay, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking about values and wanting to talk a little bit more about the importance of, you know, leading with values and choosing companies that are value driven. I like to tell stories and I like to use examples, and some of you might be aware of Zappos. It's a shoe company, Zappos. But the statement that company has for a higher quality of life is get organized and be happy. And Zappos defines its purpose as delivering happiness. So Zappos shoes are not just about shoes. They really have a strong value that is integrated and implemented and infused in their culture and their marketing and their advertising. And it's all about making people happy. And it does this specifically through good customer service. I mean, they pay attention to these things. Employees are trained that our value is happiness. So let's have a happy website. And when people call us, let's have a happy conversation with them. They have very high quality products, so their customers are happy. They have competitive prices. We all want that. And they have fast delivery. So thinking more thoroughly and aligning more deeply with what we value, well, to me, that's really the true definition of personal and business success, living in alignment with your values, the things that matter most to you. That's success.
Well, we see this I know the last time I went to a conference and flew on Southwest, in the front of the cabin was this heart, and it says, without heart, we're just a company. And I know that the customer service there, it's a totally different culture than any other airline that I've used. And I mean, another company that in this area, at least Costco, they have more organic things all the time. They're really educating people with their literature about organic, and their customer service is they're paying a reasonable price to their employees more than other places. But the culture of customer service, the customer service is just I think the thing that is making some of these companies, it's really showing that they're coming from a conscious place. And I'm not really trying to promote them, but those are just a couple that I experienced that I noticed that it's a very different culture than it is a lot of places. I see we have Carlton on line one. Carlton? Can you ask a question? I guess he's dropped off.
He did ask the question, didn't he, already?
Well, he was on earlier, but now he's called back again.
Well, you know, I want to, since you brought up corporate culture, and that is something that I've been beginning to do some training in corporate culture work with the Truby Achievement Center. I'm really enjoying seeing companies investing money in their employees having a better work-life balance. And I'm going to also just acknowledge two women who have been instrumental in that. And one of them, many of you have heard of the book Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. But as COO of Google, she had the opportunity to change the social environment and the corporate culture. And it wasn't until she was pregnant herself that she realized they needed to have more benefits for people in maternity, like parking spaces closer to the front door, because it, you know, your back can ache when you're pregnant. Nursing stations, time out places for women, fraternity leave for the men that were having babies in their household. And so as a woman, and if you really look into women's leadership, you'll see more and more women are choosing to set an example or create initiatives in the workplace that are creating a much better culture, a culture of recognition, culture of teamwork and communication and respect. Feng shui is moving its way into the corporate arena. Water, healthy food. HR is investing in wellness seminars. And we see more and more insurance companies looking at preventative medicine. And we see more and more corporations designing programs where people get benefits if they walk or bike to work. People get gyms inside of the corporate building. So the corporate culture can and will and should change. And if you have a job, you know, I think it is high time to ask your supervisor or manager, what is our company doing to create a better culture? Or how can I be more involved in supporting a healthier workplace? Because we know that work-life balance creates productivity. The other person I was going to mention, Ann Doyle, another woman who is a big leader in women's leadership, was the first female sports big name broadcaster, the first one to go into a men's locker room. That's her claim to fame, but she's also been super involved in government recently and wrote a great book herself, which are being become leaders, companies change. And I know that it's not about men and women. It's not just about gender. We all have feminine and masculine aspects, but there's something about being a woman, especially a mom, that helps you in understanding the importance of what's most important in life and maybe adding perspective to the leadership round table, the board table. So the more women that move up into executive positions and have a say or a voice on a board or at the C-level executive team, the more likely we're seeing that companies are changing their values, not just for their product, service, and customer, but also for the people who work there. And I don't have that study in front of me, but I will say that in reading Ann Doyle's book, I remember her referencing companies that improved profit by improving the culture. So it's an exciting time, and I'm really happy that you wanted to have a show kind of focused on business as a solution, business and consciousness, because like I said at the beginning, those words don't often go together, but I truly see that business is a solution, and business is how we exchange goods and services and products with each other. And so why not do it in a way that's deliberate? I mean, if you look back, it's all sacred commerce. It's all sacred exchange. It's gotten complicated. It's gotten digital, and people have gotten greedy. But when people wake up, business wakes up. And so what I would say is that people are waking up and business is waking up. and consumers are waking up, and it's a beautiful time on the planet to be a part of that momentum. We hear so much bad news, and I hope that I'm shedding some light on the good news of conscious business and the good news of how we can make a difference through voting with our dollars.
I think that is people think that they're powerless against the large corporations, but they are speaking and they are being purchased something. So if you are conscious of that and realize that you do have the power to assist in this change.
Yeah, and it's definitely everyone, be you a business owner, be you a consumer, be you a voter, be you an investor, you know, if you have a job and you're an employee, it's once again, it's just we each need to empower ourselves to live in integrity with what we know to be true. And if we can shed a little light and support individuals in choosing with more deliberateness and with more purpose and values in mind, will make a difference. So I know we've been talking about so. Go ahead. Yeah, Marietta.
One of the things that I remember you mentioned to me was the idea that green could be a solution. Tell us a little about, explain what you meant when you said that to me.
Oh, well, I think I might have been referencing my favorite book right now, which is The Green Foods Bible. By David Sandoval, but he said, could green plants hold the key to our survival? And in his introduction and his foreword, he really proposes the possibility that growing green foods and organic foods and ingesting them will support the planet in environmental sustainability, obviously, as we know, but also the human condition. And this is something, you know, I do mention a lot when I do my wellness talks. There's a lot of buzz around healing your body through your thoughts, healing your body through prayer or energy. I like to remind people that we can heal our thoughts, our consciousness, through the food we put in our body. So I know that when I'm healthy, I think more clearly. And of course I do, because my gut, which is my second brain, is cleaner. It has a better, you know, ecosystem, if you will, inside of it.
Sister, you're missing. You're missing.
Missing what?
Hello?
What are you missing,
Hello?
Tara? We are hearing her perfectly.
Joy, you're picking up.
Okay.
Now, Tara, that's not true for all of us because
now you're gone.
She's perfectly clear to me. So, okay.
Yeah, it might have been on her end.
I think it is because she's just dropped off, and one of the other people here said that they can hear fine. So I think it was just that they had a problem.
Okay. Well, so, you know, the point being what we put in our body affects how we think, how we feel. There's more studies by Dr. Schwartz, I think is his name, in New York. He just came out with a study on stress reduction through whole plants and green foods. When we cleanse the liver, we cleanse our meridian that is representative of frustration and anger. So if the planet, if people were eating more wholesome, full food, felt satisfied, had the micronutrition in their body that we so crave and desire, our bodies would be more alkalized and we would therefore have less stress and more energy to give back and contribute. So it's interesting, you know, we're really touching on my biggest values tonight, which are definitely consciousness, the environment, and wellness. And I know they go hand in hand in hand in hand, that when we're well, we are more conscious. And when we're more conscious, we recognize we're part of the greater whole on this planet. And when we're part of the greater whole, we're closer to nature. And when we're closer to nature, we crave and we eat that which is closer to nature. And we cultivate and nurture that which is closer to nature. And the cycle continues to create a beautiful possibility of awakening in paradise on planet Earth. But yeah, could green plants hold the key to our survival? And it's not a joke. We know now the Central Valley, I'm from California, and we're hearing it a lot, that the farmers are drilling deeper wells, that we don't have the water supply for the breadbasket or a large production area that feeds our country. And inflation is showing up around food. So we've got to learn how to grow our own food. I know you're a big fan of that. Sprout our own food and choose highly nutritious food. And that's another reason I love Purium. I mean, I'm starting to stockpile food. And I think I saw an article that came out on one of my favorite blogs just today that had to do with people buying dehydrated food and storing it. So I'm buying a lot of Purium greens because I can't think of a better place to get density of nutrition than through green plants. And we, you know, we do need them. And I'm not an alarmist, but I'm also someone who is going to make wise investments. And I think investing in our bodies and our health and investing in extra green foods in case of emergencies is, you know, a great thing to do.
Okay, somebody's just asked the question here. What is the Purium website? If you wish to go to the website and also have a $50 cash to spend, you may go to www.mymypurium, and that is purium.com/Stargate. Everybody knows this is Stargate Roundtable, so that is the way you can find it. mypurium.com/Stargate. And when you get there, it will come up, and up in the right-hand corner, it'll say, enter your $50 code word here. And the code word is Stargate. So that way, if you wish to explore something, you can use that to purchase food. There is a lifetime membership with the Purium. It's like if you belong to Costco or any of the other organizations where being a member, you get a discount. The same thing here is true with Purium. You can be a member and get even more discounts. And so these are all things that are gifts for our listeners, just to do mypurium.com/Stargate. And you'll have the opportunity to order something there and explore. And you, Joy, you might have something else that you might want to tell them about as far as going there and looking around. If you, you've been involved with a Purium longer than I have, and people ask me, I think the question I get most is, where did they come up with the name? And I say, well, if you take the word pure and the word premium and scrunch them together, you end up with Purium, and this is pure premium food. So
yeah, I encourage people just to explore as they feel guided. There's some great videos. I did mention the farm to family philosophy, and that's under lifestyle tab. The other thing, since we're talking about conscious business, if you'd like to look at Purium's big mission and movement, it's called the Million Mom Movement, which is all about making real food a priority, one household at a time. It's a cool group and organization Facebook page that is really looking for 1 million people to take back control of their pantries, because we know it's one person at a time. And then absolutely, it's great that you have those $50 gift cards you can offer people. I mean, it's a win-win. There's a no lose, you pay shipping, but one of the best-selling products is the Power Shake. And I would recommend people take a look at that one. It does have a lot of the cereal grasses, spirulina, as well as some rice protein and activated barley and apple berry and a very low glycemic longevity fruit to support health, immunity, and getting micronutrition in the body. But the Power Shake is one of the best sellers and a great way to redeem that generous gift that you're giving out here on the call. I'm very proud to be a distributor, a representative of Purium. I have a lot of hats I wear, especially because I'm so involved regionally in economic development and a part of my chamber and starting to do more radio programs and whatnot like this one. I would only align myself with an organization that I felt was living in alignment of those values of good, sustainable business. And really on that note, one thing I was going to share, and you're not going to find it on the website, but I found it in the manufacturing plant at Purium, is their core values that all over 100 employees work by. And I'll share them with you because they're beautiful. They're 6 core values. And this big giant banner is hanging in the facility. There's actually a few of them in every room, the shipping room, the mixing room, the packaging room. And it says customer oriented, integrity, responsibility, respect, quality, and teamwork. So imagine going every day to work and seeing front and center those core values. And imagine having a manager and a founder who is living those core values. I mean, that sets the bar higher. And I know that we're not only eating food when we eat Purium, we're eating energy. When we eat anything or consume anything, there's a bioenergetic transmission. And I love to know that the values of the people who are producing these products are also lined up and reminded and caring about customers' integrity, responsibility, quality, respect, and teamwork. So I think that's about, I mean, I could go on for ever, as you know, I usually can, but I have nothing more to say tonight.
It was interesting that you used the word bioenergetics, because when we were ready to name our farm, it was literally given the name is Bioenergetic Harmonics. And so that's the name of our organic farm. And it was not something that we figured out. It was just, okay. When we asked, that was what was given. So it was fascinating to see you use those words and to help explain to people how the energy works. So, well, we're grateful that you've taken time to share all of this with us and remind people. I see I do have another email here. The website, one more time, is www.mypurium.com. .com/Stargate. And once you get there, your code word to get your $50 cash is. So thank you, Joy, for sharing with us. And we look forward to seeing you when it's the right time again. And I think the conscious business aspect is something that is growing all the time. And to have you explain it and to help people. A lot of them have been feeling it, but they didn't know how to put it into words. And I think that was really wonderful that you're able to talk about it so that people had the feeling, now have a way to express it.
Well, my pleasure.
Thank you again. And we look forward to seeing you another time.
Good night.
All right. We'll take a musical break here, and then we'll come back the last hour, and Tara and Rama will share some more information about what's going on, and we'll take that break now. Well, welcome back to the last segment of our Stargate Roundtable. We're happy to have all of you remaining with us. And Tara and Rama, I know you have a lot of things to share. I've had a couple people that have wanted you to talk about the blue. Now I forgot
the blue avians. The blue avians.
Yes.
Yes. What do they want to know about the blue avians?
I think just more about it. That they just said, could we ask you to explain it?
Okay. I know there was on rumor mills, there was an article that said that the blue avians were not good and
that they weren't real.
And that they weren't real.
And that they were an actual artificial intelligence program put out by the Black Ops. And
that is the last thing that's true. And what the King of Swords told Rama is that's the Black Op itself, the article is.
Yeah, I mean, long before Cobra ever got into the picture, or David Wilcox or E.T. Corey, I mean, back in the 70s and the 80s, long before I even met Tara, I was going up on the ships with Ashtar and Mother, and I met the blue avian people and the lion people and the reptilian people, and all of these folks are part of the intergalactic confederation of worlds, as well as the intergalactic confederation. They are absolutely real, and they come from the seventh all the way up to the 12th dimension. Some of them don't even have bodies. They show up as spheres, you know, the Sphere Alliance. There's also stories about them that they have come in with these ships that are larger than the planet Neptune. I mean, that is huge.
Yeah, that's big.
And these beings.
So these things don't show up in the atmospheric because they can't. They would destroy the axial excursion of a whole planet.
Yeah.
When they're as big as a planet that's so big it's bigger than Earth by I don't know how many times, you know. Go ahead, Drow.
These beings come in with the office of the Christ and work with the energies of the ones who I would call the Sephiroth and the ones who sit before the throne of Mother, Father, God. And they have only the intentions of this planet's ascension as the 33rd member of the Confederation of Worlds. And that's no con. It is.
By the way, happy birthday to you, Harriet. Happy birthday
Harriet.
Happy birthday, dear Harriet. Happy birthday. Whoops. Happy birthday to you.
And many more,
sister. I'm just chastising myself for watching this day come and go without remembering you. Thank you, sister, for your life, and thank you for the beautiful soul that you brought to all of us, Angel Sue, as well. And may your days be prosperous and long, and may this turnaround on this planet rejuvenate all of us to the age of 30. Amen. Here we go. Okay. So on that note also, I mean, we are in red alert on so many levels.
Yeah.
It's and I guess it's what it takes for that which is a little bit denser in its awareness to get a shake-up, you might say. And so a shake-up we're going to get.
I would just put it that way. And there are shakeups going on. I mean, we watched something today, Rama. It was on America Tonight. And they say that we're having global, what they call, whiteouts in the coral reefs. In other words, the coral reefs are being invaded by these brown fungus-like algae, and they're being completely destroyed. And when they're destroyed, they turn into skeletal structures. One way you can see that they turn into skeletal structures of themselves, and then what's on top of them is this brown algae fungi. Or they get completely white. They lose all of their color, and all life inside there is gone. And the and when they go diving, and it's global. I mean, it's global. And when they're going diving, and they go in and they look at these reefs the way they are, and the fish are coming there, and the fish go into shock because they get all their food from there. So they have this realization that they're going to die. And the reason for this global situation is because there is global warming. And the global warming, Marita, is that you? I can just hear it makes a bit louder noise on this end. But the global warming is acidifying the oceans. And the oceans take up most of the global warming. They suck it into their space more than they do that are affected by us. I was just looking at a temperature, though, on NHK news out of Japan today. And in Algeria, a place in Algeria in northern Africa, it was 48 degrees Celsius. So I'm not quite sure, but that's something like 40 degrees Fahrenheit. That's how hot it was in that place. And there was another place that was 43 degrees in Spain. Okay, that's 115, 116 like that degrees in a place in Spain. Of course, you folks over there in Nevada, piece of cake, I know. But
ouch.
Not. This is not okay. You cannot live in that temperature, not for any length of time. So this is happening. And all kinds of people died in Pakistan because they've got massive flooding. And they've got thousands and thousands of people that are cut off that can't escape because the floods are all around them and they're just hanging on, you know. So that's going on. And then there's this huge cyclonic storm in the Indian Ocean on the west side of India up into Bangladesh. And it's not a pretty picture either. So that was just for today. The Egyptian courts delayed the verdict for these for the ninth time for these three Al Jazeeran journalists. And actually, the journalist that was sent back to Australia, he doesn't have to worry. I think he got off completely. Mm. But the other two, every time they delay, what they are going through is every time when they have to go to the courtroom and then it gets delayed again, what they have to go through is just horrendous.
And they
have to say goodbye to all of their loved ones as if they weren't going to come back in case they stick them back in prison for life or whatever.
And on a side note, with Egypt, the U.S. just sold Egypt 8 F-16 fighter jets. Why in heaven do we still continue to play with these ancient war weapons?
Well, all we got to do is take the higher road on that and know that the Galactics have said we're in charge and they're going to. I mean, I don't know when. I just know that Dr. Keshe said nothing will work.
Right.
Whenever that is.
Yes.
There was an interesting piece that I was listening to that there's a chance. Marita, I can hear all that noise. It's very, very loud, whatever you're doing. Just maybe you can
start. I'm not
doing
anything. I'm just sitting here.
Oh.
Okay.
Well,
I'll just mute, and then it won't matter.
Okay. I don't know, but it's louder on this end. I'm sorry. But I was just going to say that Syria, that there was a suggestion that you see that Turkey is stepping into a double war now.
Yeah.
They've started an offensive against the PKK, which is a Kurdish group, and they're going after them in Turkey, inside Turkey, and in Iraq right now, and they're bombing the heaven out of them. And 200 Kurdish people died in the last couple of days from that bombing. And they're saying that 3 Turkish guards were killed, and they're blaming it on the PKK. There's no proof of that. And I'm just going to say Erdogan has got an itch for going after the Kurdish. He always has.
I visited Kurdistan when it was still Kurdistan, a very awesome place.
Awesomely beautiful, very gorgeous place, yes. So that's not necessary, but that's what's going on yet. There was an interesting article. Let's see if I can find the beginning of that. That was actually discussing how this could stop. Everything could stop. Let's see. Okay, here. It starts here with political capital regarding Iran. Let's start there. Who wants its corridor in Lebanon and wants to be able to get to its militia there, which is, they call it Hezbollah. And I just want to remind everybody that the King of Swords said Hezbollah is not a terrorist organization.
No.
That's an important thing to note. Iran wants hegemony, is what this person's saying, over Syria. It can maintain all of this without Assad by maintaining some semblance of a regime that is friendly to Iran moving forward. So it's not wishful thinking at all. Then Al Jazeera says, well, now the United Nations special envoy for Syria announced that he wants to restart the peace talks. Yet really, what peace talks are we talking about? They never took off at all back when the day was. And different parties refuse to sit at the table with each other. And Rasha Alas is her name. She says, yeah, exactly. The trouble with the Syria war today is that there's so many conflicting interests. Here, Amma, you got to do this. There's one more that has to be brought up. Conflicting interests and various parties that are involved. Yet right now, the main parties, Iran, Russia, Turkey, and of course Saudi Arabia, and of course the Syrian opposition and the Syrian people. That's a lot of parties. Iran, Russia, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, the Syrian opposition, and the Syrian people. These are the main parties. Those parties, since the beginning of the war, this is really the best time for them to come together now because of the political capital of the nuclear agreement that has been had here just now. Assad has finally admitted publicly some sort of defeat. He knows his forces are tired. He knows that Iran and Russia will not support him forever. And Al Jazeera says that's making him more inclined to try to find some sort of political solution. Is that true? And Rasha Alas says, yes, yet it won't. He is not going to come up with a political solution on his own. he's going to need that push from his patrons, Iran and Russia. And I think right now is a good time for especially Iran, as it joins the international community to sort of cash in on some political capital and to come out as a conciliatory party to resolve the crisis in Syria. Then Al Jazeera says, well, on the other hand, how much can peace talks accomplish as groups like ISIL and al-Nusra, who've become large players in the war there, would likely never be included in those talks? And then Rasha says, well, you know, I think ISIL will be irrelevant as soon as there is some sort of solution to the Syria crisis, in as Assad is removed from power. Now, years ago, the King of Swords said that Obama was going to help with that. And, you know, he didn't say when, but he said that removing Assad from power would come up. So she's hitting that nail on the head as a right now time, right now. Couldn't be better when we know what's coming on the galactic and spiritual levels with these astrology signals. So this is a very good parallel. Okay, I think slowly ISIL will become more and more irrelevant as people on the ground stop supporting it. In the end, ISIL gets its power from the existence of the Assad regime. So tackling that will neutralize ISIL. Even as, and I'm just adding this, even as Israel and, you know, Israel's supporters over here, McCain and Lindsey Graham, et cetera, and then the collaborators of our Republicans, safe zone in Syria is the next issue. At first, it was announced that the United States and Turkey would enforce this zone there along the Turkish-Syrian border, a safe zone. Yet now, it isn't even really clear that the United States has agreed to it. So, is there confusion about what the parties want to do? Rasha says confusion, I think, is over Turkey's real motive here with the safe zone. Obviously, the United States does not want Turkey to be focused mainly on the Kurds, or, you know, the PKK is the Kurds, or to focus its wrath on preventing the Kurds from forming any sort of unity along its border. Turkey seems to be as obsessed with the Kurds as they are with ISIL at this point. That's true. So I think this is a point of contention between Turkey and the United States. Yet it will be resolved. There's a safety zone. A safety zone is really important right now because Turkey is suffering from so much pressure from the displaced Syrian population in their country. It would be so much easier for Syrians and Turks and everyone involved to keep Syrians in Syria in a safe zone. And then the story about Turkey stepping up its military stuff over a made-up story. So we'll just put that whole thing in the circle of support. It does help to know what's going on, though. Tom Hartman brought up something that really raised my eyebrows. That we get a lot of our salmon from Chile, and there was this man on there, or no, it was Patty Lavera that came on there. She's really good. She's the assistant director of Food and Water Watch. Anyway, they are using huge quantities of what are called quinolones, which are a form of antibiotics that they're putting in that salmon. And Costco, the big chain of Costco across the nation, have been rejecting this salmon for those reasons. The gentleman went into in-depthness about, you know, that particular type of antibiotics. It is serious. It's causing serious illness and sometimes death in people who are eating that stuff. It just isn't setting well with the people themselves. So I just wanted to, what they were saying is to make sure it says United States wild caught only. We only inspect less than 2% of our fish food coming into this country. 2%, less than 2%. In Europe, they inspect at least 20% of their fish food. Okay, we've got 35 minutes. I did pull another piece that Rachel brought up. It just was a... What a trip is going on here. Let's see. Where did it start? Lieutenant Commander Bill Keebler. She talked about this gentleman, and he died of cancer, and he was only 44 years old. And he was ordered to give Omar Khadr the best legal defense possible down there in Gitmo Bay. And as his military assigned lawyer for him, they picked a good one. He was a lieutenant commander in the United States Navy. He was dogged and serious in mounting the defense in this case. Ultimately, his defense strategy is how Omar Khadr was finally released from Gitmo after a decade. He got out in 2012, yet then, this month, about a week and a half ago, that excellent military lawyer who worked successfully on that remarkable case, he died. He died at the age of 44. 44? Lieutenant Commander Bill Keebler died from cancer. It's reportedly a very aggressive cancer that was first found in his appendix. He leaves behind a wife who is also a Navy lawyer. He also leaves behind their 12-year-old son. Commander Keebler will be buried at the United States Naval Academy after tomorrow's service, which meant today. It happened today after the service. Okay, as Gitmo Bay is in the news, it's usually about trying to close it, or maybe it's something about one of the prisoners being held there. This is neither of these stories. This is about Commander Keebler's death from cancer and several other people's deaths and a number of people who have recently gotten very, very sick. And this is something that could actually be a coincidence, yet it could be random occurrence, yet it also could be something very scary. And the Navy has now announced that they are going to open an investigation into claims that a large and apparently disproportionate number of people like Commander Bill Keebler, young and healthy people who have worked at Gitmo or who have served in the military there, specifically as part of the military commissions. They are investigating what seems to be an unusually large number of those people getting diagnosed with very grave illnesses or dying from them. The Center for Constitutional Rights, very good group, Sovereign Lawsmiths, everybody, has a number of lawyers who have served on cases at Gitmo. They have now compiled what they say is a list of more than 20 people, civilians and military personnel, including a number of lawyers who they say have become, in their words, gravely ill after spending time living and working at Gitmo on the military commissions base. The Miami Herald reports that a lawyer in the Navy Reserve, a lawyer that worked at Gitmo on one of the military commission's cases there, this month filed a complaint with the names of the seven military and civilian personnel who have worked at along with the names of 7 million, no, 7 military and civilian personnel who have worked at the military commissioner's compound at Gitmo in recent years and who have since been diagnosed with cancer. The Miami Herald itself has started compiling its own list of cancer cases that have been diagnosed among people who have worked at the military commission site. This specific part of the Gitmo base, where 9 individuals who suffered from a range of cancers, lymphoma, brain cancer, appendix cancer, or colon cancer, over the past 7 years. The Herald says so far, these are 9 people from that relatively small group of working age healthy people, and 3 people from that very small group have died from cancer just in the last 13 months. Marine Lieutenant Bill Keebler, who died this past Friday, the 24th, the Pentagon-appointed defense lawyer who fought for Omar Khadr. Lieutenant Keebler's funeral, yes, okay, in January, it was Army Colonel Robert Joseph Kotel. He was an Afghan combat vet. He earned a Bronze Star. He'd also worked at the military commissions at Gitmo. He died of cancer in January. He was 52. Just watch. Did you turn that off? I don't think that's supposed to be on anymore. Then you got to turn it back on again, you know, when it's supposed to be. He died at 52. In June, I mean, he was 52. In June of last year, it was Marine Major Joshua Kirk. Major Kirk had been valedictorian of his high school class. He got a law degree at the University of Virginia. He was an Iraq war vet. Then he worked on the military commissions at Gitmo. He died last year, we are told, of cancer at the ripe old age of 35. And all these other serious illnesses and cancer diagnoses among these relatively young, healthy, working age people, all of whom worked at the military commission site at Gitmo. What's going on here? Most prisoners at Gitmo don't go on trial at all. A select few have been tried in this ad hoc military commission system that the Bush administration invented and that the Obama administration has half-heartedly kept going. Yet it is a whole court system, a whole justice system invented just for this purpose, and it has a lot of problems, not the least of which are logistical. I mean, they set up this justice system on a United States naval base on an island nation of Cuba in a country that does not want us there. It is not like the lawyers and the other people involved in this justice system can just stay at the Holiday Inn in some nearby town and meet their clients like normal. What they did at Gitmo to basically make this thing possible was that they built lawyers and other personnel involved in the commissions. They built them a little tent city. It's a tent city in a kind of trailer park on the base. It's on Gitmo, and it's specifically for the military personnel and civilians and the lawyers involved in these commissions. They set up this little tent city in 2008. These military commissions cases, they all take years and years. And the people who are working on those cases, just logistically, they find it hard to come and go as often as they might want to. They are basically totally dependent on the military for transportation and everything else for obvious reasons. So working on the military commission's case means, to a certain extent, living in the city compound. which happens to be built on an old disused airstrip where who knows what was on that site before they put up all those tents and trailers there. One of the things raised in the complaint to the Inspector General is that this may have been a place that they dumped jet fuel, some components of which are known to be carcinogens. A few hundred people have lived and worked there. What seems like a disproportionate number of them have died in quick succession from cancers at a young age. A larger number have been diagnosed with cancer or with other very serious illnesses. The complaint to the Pentagon from this Navy Reserve lawyer reportedly asks that the compound at Gitmo should be completely evacuated, that those lawyers and other personnel should be taken off that site while an investigation occurs into what's going on there. Well, the Navy now says they have opened up that investigation, yet they are leaving the people there. They are not evacuating anyone, at least not yet. Then she introduced Shana Cadedal from the Center for Constitutional Rights as well. So, 9 cancer cases, about a dozen other odd health problems, things like thyroid issues, unexplained growths out of a pool of about 200 people who have spent an awful amount of time down there in the camp, in Camp Justice. Rachel says, and is it fair, this won't be much longer, to describe those people as working age, relatively healthy, robust people? Got to watch that and turn off, honey. Shana says, yes. See, don't do that, please. Okay. Yes, see, you point out that the cancer cases are all typically younger people, which is not typical of cancer. I think we also haven't found any pattern, although we've looked at people having served previously in toxic zones in Iraq and Afghanistan, being exposed to chemical weapons destruction, or a depleted uranium tailings, or anything like that. We still haven't seen that kind of a statistic. What they do have in common is that they all served in Camp Justice. So we haven't seen this pattern of weird instances of cancer before 2008, which is exactly when Camp Justice at Tent City that you referred to opened up. Beyond that, the office building where Commission Council work in has itself had to have been closed down for a while, about 2 years ago, I believe. It would have to be remediated for toxic mold and potentially also for asbestos issues. The place is covered with signs that say, do not drink the water under any circumstances, out of the taps. So, you know, there are lots of signs that there may be a problem here. Rama, I remember a little while ago I watched something about Cuba, and we left radioactive material all over that part of Cuba. So we were doing nuclear tests with submarines off that part of Gitmo Bay on the coast of Cuba. So they're not bringing that up. I'm bringing it up. Nonetheless, I'm not going to finish this except to say that when Gitmo Bay covers 40 or 50 square miles, yet their concern, you know, they asked about the prisoners, and it's not the prisoners. It's just that one space. So this lawyer from Center for Constitutional Rights, one thing he did say is, I would not trust the military to do it or the Navy to do it. He said he wants to have the EPA or somebody else do it because they do not tell you their results. And he said he had his example for himself because he used to bring food and share it with one of the clients at Gitmo Bay that, they didn't tell, the military did not tell him or his client that his client had hepatitis C. So it is not a good idea to share food because the saliva passes that ill to another person. And he said that's an absolutely huge transgression. So he said, do not trust our military. So what we're getting down to here, to the nub of it, Central for Constitutional Rights is an awesome group of people. They know 9/11 was an inside job, and we're just getting down to the brass tacks here. There was one more story I just briefly say that Tom Hartman covered about a week ago, but I just transcribed the whole thing because it's just unbelievable. They do not allow policemen to become policemen as they get a higher score than the general score they want their policemen to get. When you have the highest score and you pass the whole test, you get a score of 50. When you get anything over 21 or 22 is what they say is the ceiling, then they won't let you become a policeman. And a policeman or a man that wanted to be a policeman in the Connecticut police force, he got a 33 instead of a 21 or a 22, and they would not select, they did not select him to come into the training of the academy. And he took it to court, and the court upheld the decision that was made because they said it wasn't discriminatory because it was consistent and they just had a line of demarcation. So there is a very low IQ level in general that policemen are allowed to have. It's not average. It's lower than average. And you can't become a policeman unless you get that score or, you know, or less, which is another story. And the other thing is that policemen carry uranium, depleted uranium tailings in every bullet, in every gun that they have. And it's in the metal of the gun, too. So they're carrying around with them radiation poisoning, and it's going into their systems. Put those two things together, a less than average intelligence and a lethal radioactive dose on a regular basis, and then put them out in the streets and think whatever else might trigger them, what might happen. Ninja mutant turtles out in the streets playing cops and robbers. Okay, we're going to put all that stuff in the circle of support. And now let's go see what our friend Nassim has to say. We're going to start over at about the 9-minute level because it was really a very short-lived thing, so you can follow the consistency and keep going from there from last week. Here we go. Okay, and just pull it up to 8:22. Okay, now pull it up to 8:22. All right, right there. Okay.
So, there we go. So I was, you know, I'm going to start this talk by just like going from the basics. And if you wanted to, you know, there's this worldview change that's occurring. And if you wanted to understand the universe, if you're trying to figure out how you got here and how it works, all this stuff all around you, you call reality, you would have two initial departure point possibility. One would be that we live in a disconnected universe, and the other one that we live in a connected universe. And, you know, some of the criterias that would define these two views would be, for instance, everything emerged from some miraculous Big Bang, you know, that like started everything. In the disconnected view, since nothing is connected to anything, the beginning has to be some kind of nothingness that all of a sudden is everythingness. And you don't really have an explanation for it. You don't have a concept on how it got there. You don't know the mechanics of it. And so right from the start, you violate fundamental laws of physics, laws of conservation of energy and momentum and conservation of information and so on, because you're making a miracle happen. So you start with a miracle. So you might as well, go to church and be told, well, God did it all, right? Because it's basically how the Big Bang theory starts, all right? Now, in a connected universe, you have something a little different. Everything emerged from some fundamental continuous process, right? Like there's a fundamental continuous process that got everything where it's at today, right? That is not some initial miracle, but a continuous, infinite kind of process of relationship. You can, in the disconnected universe, you would have everything is random and evolution happens by chance, right? Everything, you got a big bang, everything went flying out, everything is just hitting each other randomly, and by an incredible, amazing circumstance, things just happen to hit just right so that you got here, right? But the thing is, when you do the math for that, it doesn't add up, right? Like when you do the probabilities of that incredibly amazing, chance or probability that things would have occurred just right, because you see, any tweak of any of the fundamental forces, any tweak of anything that happened at the very beginning of this so-called Big Bang, by very, very slight changes of the fundamental forces, all of a sudden, nothing comes together. Like matter doesn't coalesce, stars don't happen, galaxies don't happen, planets don't happen, nothing happens. It just goes, and it flies out. It's all done with, right? Like nothing is occurring. So the probabilities, when you this the fine-tuning problem, when you calculate the probabilities of that, actually working out so that it made our universe and it made us right here, right now, it's incredibly improbable that it would occur, all right? The probabilities are like 10 to the 8,800 and something. That's like 10 with like 8,000 zeros just for one simple monocellular structure to develop, right? So it's not kind of feasible. But in a connected universe, everything is part of an information network structure producing self-organizing system, because the thing is talking to itself. It's connected. So it knows what it's doing. It's going. It's learning as it's going. So it has feedback. It has feed forward, right? The whole thing is talking to itself. So then it can develop super fast, right? It can actually create really high level of complexity with very little rules, with very small information, like yes, no, yes, no, like even binary. So it's a completely different view. It's a completely different result. In the disconnected universe, the universe has no meaning and no global universal coherency. It's just a big boom that happened. And, we kind of got here by some fluke and, but it really has no meaning. It's not going anywhere. It doesn't know what it's doing. It's just, we're kind of some bacterial life in the universe that just does, thinks that it's important what they're doing, but at the end of the day, it just doesn't matter because we're so small. in the connected view, the universe is a specific, I can barely see it from here. The universe is on a specific evolutionary track resulting from the collective information network of the whole, you know. It's going somewhere. It's learning about itself. It's evolving. It's excited. It's like, it's doing one of you, you know. It's an amazing thing. And it's looking back and it's thinking, wow, it's beautiful what I'm doing out there, you know. And it's loving itself. It has emotion. It has, you know, it has connectivity. It relates to itself. It loves itself, right? It's evolving. It's creating incredible level of complexity. And so those are very, very different views. With one simple syllable change, you know, in the view. So which one makes you feel the most warm and fuzzy? Which one would you instinctively think is most likely the correct view? You know, the connected universe, right? Which even mathematically actually agrees with what we observe, which is incredible level of complexity and evolutionary self-organizing systems. So if it's a connected universe, how is it connected, right? Because we hear that all the time from the spiritual masters, you know, it's all one and all this stuff. From the spiritual groups and all this, and, you know, like you go home after a bad day at work and you're upset with your boss and you call your best spiritual friend and the first thing they tell you, it's all one, dude. Chill out, because your boss is just a reflection, you know? And so, you know, but it's like, but how is it all one? I don't feel like my boss, you know? I, you know? I'm just not feeling that way right now. So, is there actually a fundamental mechanism? Is there actually physics that we can write on this stuff? Can we actually understand the physics of the universe as a connected universe, as a unified view? And where would that lead us? I mean, that if we could find that, we would come really, really close to the fundamental functions of creation. It would be very powerful. Imagine the technological developments that could come from such an understanding, for instance. The social changes that would occur if we had actual physical, mathematical, technological proof that we are completely connected to everything, not just to each other, to everything, to the animal kingdom, to the plants, to the stage, to the carpet, to everything. Like the worldview change. You know, I just went surfing in Baja because after the delegate program pilot where I had to write some 400 pages, my staff was like, okay, you're out of here, right? I was getting grumpy. It's like, okay, you got to take a vacation. So I was sent to Baja by force to go surf. And when I crossed the border, every time, you know, it was just, it's so shocking because you're driving along the borderline, which is a complete artificial concept, right? And you got this huge fence there. And on one side of the fence, you got these people in complete, you know, poverty, suffering in the street, you know, with nothing, right? And you look right across the fence over there and you get million dollar homes, right? And it's like, wow, can we just take this fence off? you know? Can we just take this line we made off, like get everybody together and have a good time? And those Mexican dudes, they're good at having a good time. So how would we do that? Well, first of all, we would have to come up with something that connects everything, right? We'd have to say, okay, well, what is it that connects everything? Like, if I'm looking at describing a connected universe, I would have to, you know, find the thing that connects. And so I would have to ask the question, what is everywhere that connects every point in space? And the only answer I could come up with after a while of thinking would be space. Space is everywhere. It's in between galaxies, it's in between stars, it's in between planets, it's in between molecules or in between atoms. In the most dense molecule, like carbon, like diamond molecule, one atom relative to the other, if I grew one of the atom in that molecule so that it was an orange, the other one would be about a football field and a half or 2 football field away. That's how much space there is between the atoms in that molecule. And that's the densest molecule we have. And then if we actually looked at the atom in that molecule, we'd find, oh my God, it's 99.999999% space. Right? So in the stuff that we call so dense, we're talking about space. I get that from the spiritual community all the time. It's like, oh, it's so dense down here. Dude. We're talking about mostly space. And so this 0.00000001 of a percent over there, and that's the thing we call matter. That's the thing we call our reality. And we're completely absorbed and concentrated on that part, right? But in fact, we could start to think, well, maybe actually that part is just a little bit of the space that's producing a boundary, right? Because when we look at that 0.00000001 of a percent, in fact, it's just a little electromagnetic wave that's oscillating, right? We call it an atom. We can't, you know, when we look at the middle of an atom, a proton, the only thing we can say about the proton is that there's a charge there. That there's a little electromagnetic charge there. That's why the radius of the proton is called the charge radius of the proton, because it's not like we're seeing a billiard ball over there, right? It's just a little charge. So this little charge and this little charge, they're not in phase. So when I go like this, I hit something, because, you know, the charge are hitting each other, but nothing is actually touching. You know, I'm sorry to say, but you have never touched anything. It's all about friction. But let's not go there. Oh. So then all of a sudden you start to think maybe differently. Maybe space is the thing you should study. Maybe space is not this thing that's just empty or void of anything, of everything, but actually maybe space is the thing that makes the other thing you call things happen, right? And so many thinkers and some of the greatest minds on our planet made statements that are really profound about space. For instance, John Archibald Wheeler, one of the greatest physicists, no point is more central than this, that empty space is not empty. it is the seat of the most violent physics, right? David Bohm, space is not empty, it's full. The universe is not separate from the cosmic sea, from this cosmic sea of energy. Talking about space, right? Einstein, physical objects are not in space, but these objects are spatially extended. Sorry, I'm very dyslexic, so you're going to have to excuse me. In this way, the concept empty space lose its meaning. This is Einstein. So, and there's many, many more quotes I could pull out from, and these are the most respected physicists on the planet, some of the greatest genius we've ever had, talking about space being the most important thing we should study, or the most important thing we should explore, and the source of most of what we experience. So why would these guys say that? Because these guys don't get to say anything if it's not written in some equation somewhere, right? You know, they can't just start philosophizing about space. I mean, they can, but then they would get the big poo-poo from the rest of the physics community. So how do they come to those conclusions? Well, in order to understand how they came to those conclusions, we're going to have to do a little physics. I'm going to try to keep it simple, but we're going to do a little, you know, math as well.
Okay. We'll do the math next time. There's a little chart here that says quantum mechanics. The ultraviolet catastrophe of a black body radiation led to a revolution in physical, in physics. That's Max Planck, 1894. The entitled radiation from a black body actually occurs in... The emitted radiation from a black body actually occurs in what does that say? Integron?
Yeah.
Integron? Mm-hmm. that where the total amount of energy jumps from one value to another, creating a
quantitated
energy pocket, later called a quanta,
rather than
a continuum. I guess that's a bit of an explanation of how we take quantum leaps in a short little version. E equals HV is what that says. Okay, well, we'll just have to save that for next week. So what are we? Is that 26 minutes, 33 seconds? Okay, we'll start at 26 next time. As the unicorn does live among the snows, held up forever on the line of the equator. That means high up by the equator. Then it is clear why the world should know so little about him. Odell Shepherd said that. And they are way up in the mountains. These are kind of roundish mountains, though. But they're rocks, they're cliffs and everything. Way up there, and there's snow on the ground, and he is all by his lonesome self. He's a gorgeous thing. And then one more, it says, his horn bursts from his tranquil brow, springs like a lily, white from the earth below, to a longed-for height, or a fountain bright, spurting light of early morn, O luminous horn. Anne Morrill Lindbergh said that. And there's a early morning unicorn sight here up in the snow, way up in the snow, looking a little bit dizzy at O Dark 30. Until we see you tomorrow, everyone, let peace prevail on every part of this beautiful planet. Let the glimpse of a future that holds that peace for all those that have volunteered to be in the midst of the chaos. And may this precious time that we live in spur our hearts to open more every moment. And I will see you in your dreams and on the bridge tonight. And tomorrow comes soon enough. And this is the blue moon we've been waiting for a long time. Remember to write down everything you wish to manifest. And I would do it for a universal wish for everyone. I think that would be the Nisara dream. Okay. See you tomorrow. Namaste and Music Maestro. Thank you.